Out of the tree of life, I just picked me a plum.
Hi, this is Rhea Goodman, and welcome to Living Juicy. What is living juicy? Well, it's living with the zest, the passion, the curiosity, the creativity, and the spirit that keeps life exciting and new and real. Now in its 10th year, Living Juicy delivers the people, the events, the ideas that are, well, outside the mainstream. I talk with artists and healers, writers, musicians, chefs, directors, actors, filmmakers, anthropologists, and visionaries whose work is often alternative and inspiring. My website is www.livingjuicy.org, where you can find over 200 juicy interviews. Please check it out. Lauren Camp is a visual artist and a poet. She magically blends art, voice, poetry, and sound to address social and environmental issues, to awaken the inner sense of space between words, and to connect us in a deep and emotional way to each other in our humanity. Here is a quote from someone named Patrick Clement. He says, "I think of Lauren as an interpreter of experiences. She's able to go deeply into our world and transform the daily horrors into personal understanding. How audacious, using fabric, poetry, and sculpture to fix the transitory world in our hearts and minds." As an accomplished visual artist creating fiber portraits, sculptures, and mixed-media work, Lauren's series called The Fabric of Jazz was exhibited in 10 museums in the United States over a 4-year period. Many of her works have been commissioned, collected, and exhibited in hospitals, museums, cultural centers, and embassies. Since 2003, Lauren Camp has been involved with KSFR, first hosting The Colors of Jazz and now producing a new program called Audio Saucepan on Sunday evenings. Raised in New York and now a Santa Fe resident since 1994, Lauren holds a B.S. from Cornell and an M.A. in Oral Interpretation of Literature and an Advertising PR from and an M.A. in Oral Interpretation of Literature and Advertising and Public Relations from Emerson College. That was too much info. Her art and poetry can be found on her website, www.laurencamp.com. She is celebrating the publication of her first book of poems, This Business of Wisdom. Out next week from West End Press, it is my great pleasure to welcome Lauren Camp. Hi, Lauren.
Thank you, Rhea.
Did you ever do too big an intro and know as you were doing it, it was just too long?
It's too much, yeah.
She's been on the radio lots and lots and lots. It's fun sitting opposite her.
Thank you, Lauren. It's great to be here.
Ah, it's fun when you're on the other end now, too.
Yeah, to not have to do all the controls is lovely.
So, Lauren, you've had a love affair with words and music and art. Tell us how that began and what moved in first.
Well, it's an interesting question. Where you got hung up in the intro was on the things that I studied. And as you said, I didn't study any of those things, art, music, words. I studied other things. Mm-hmm. And I've decided that everything I study are the things that I don't do. I have to do the things I don't know enough about, things that there aren't rules for. And what came first? I don't know. I think art and writing came together, actually, when I was a little girl. There was neither in my house, and there were no artists. There was no music, really, in my house growing up. Mm. No musicians. My mother was a reader, and that was about as close as I came. And yet I was a creative little being, and I just took everything there was, and I turned it into things. I would copy Raggedy Ann and Andy books on tracing paper. I would make Shrinky Dinks. I would write little stupid poems to my brother. I mean, it really didn't matter. I just did it. As long as I could. Funny, because now I'd like to go out and hike and do other things, but then I just wanted to stay in and make stuff.
And so it kind of started with art and writing together. And so when did music, because you're so well educated in terms of jazz, when did that happen for you?
Well, when I first started really making art, I guess as an adult, I was I had found this medium of fabric and thread. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't have a sewing background. And yet I decided this is what I wanted to work with mm. textiles. So once I got slightly, and I'm talking just like ever so slightly competent at it, I started thinking about what I wanted to do for my next project. And what original piece, I think it was maybe the third original piece I did, was a portrait of Louis Armstrong.
Wow.
Yeah. And
In fabric.
Of
boy,
4 feet square. Oh. And
4 feet square. Mm-hmm. Collage.
Layered fabric and stitched. And it was mostly hand appliqué. And then.
Do you still have that?
No, it's in the collection of a record label in Detroit, Michigan.
Cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I'll show it to you. But I was listening to jazz, not really knowing anything about it, and decided, okay, I'm listening to the music and I'm making art about something else. I think I'll put them together. Hmm. And I'll do all the jazz musicians I know. And there were four. Only four at that time.
Who were the others?
Billie Holiday, Duke Ellington, Ella Fitzgerald, and Louis Armstrong.
This is a big four.
Yeah, big four. And right. And I decided I was going to do them all in one portrait. And that was it. And then I'd move on to a new piece about something totally different. Well, I couldn't put those four together. And I did.
Too big.
Yeah, too big. Yeah. I mean, it was going to be like Taj Mahal size. It was ridiculous.
Of course.
So I actually sort of moved back and stopped. And a friend said, why don't you do them separate? And I did. I decided, okay, I'm going to take Louis Armstrong. His music makes me feel so good. And in the process of doing that, it took a year. And in the process, I discovered all these other musicians. And the series grew and grew and grew. And it became a 12-year series.
Because we're talking about Louis now, do you happen to have the poem Satchmo's Mouth with you?
I do have
Yay!
It with me.
Oh, good, because I've never read it or heard it, and I would love to hear Satchmo's Mouth. Ooh.
Well, let me just tell you a little about it.
Please.
Before I read it.
Yeah.
It started off as a long story poem. I enjoyed reading to audiences these whole stories about different musicians and how I'd bring them into my life and befriend them. And these poems came about after the jazz series began traveling, after I began on the radio. So everything sort of came chronologically and like braided into each other.
So the jazz series, how many were in there? That was a traveling show.
It was a traveling show. All in fabric for
right.
4 years.
With music back to, were you combining music then with your art?
I didn't combine it, but I suggested it to curators. So the curators at all the different museums did all sorts of different things with it. They did music, they did workshops, and the ones that I thought were, most of them did music in the background, like piped in, or had live musicians there.
And how big were these pieces? They were the big four that you mentioned.
Yeah, the pieces were all various sizes. I would say the largest one was maybe varying sizes, but the one I did of Duke Ellington's orchestra, I did a portrait of Ellington, and then in all the research I decided, you know what? His whole orchestra, that was his band, that was his instrument, was his band, and
sure.
He wrote for all those musicians that were with him for all those years, Johnny Hodges and Cootie Williams and all of them. And so I needed to do another portrait of the whole Ellington Orchestra, and that's one of the larger ones and one of the more time-consuming ones, maybe five and a half feet square.
Wow.
I did a portrait of Billie Holiday and her lyrics from God Bless the Child and Strange Fruit.
Oh, my God.
The story about lynching. So they all had so much meaning and so much sort of myself put into them and research. And then it went out on the road. It traveled all over the U.S. to 10 places, 10 museums, 10 cities.
Yeah.
And thousands and thousands of people got to see it. It was wonderful.
Huh. So back to Satchmo's Mouth.
Oh, sorry. Let me read it
to you. It's okay. I asked you another question in between. It's all right. Yeah.
Satchmo's Mouth. Satchmo, I said, can I crawl inside your mouth? The temple, the tempo of grunting sunlight. Dry gravel self against self, the gritty timber of time. You are my confession. I worship the bright windows of your teeth opening into fading to forgiveness. Feed me grass and ice cream. the wisdom of the messy world. But I was dreaming, a cord of velvet kisses, the jute skin nap, rapid revolutions of parched sound.
that evokes a real physical sensation.
Yeah, some people say it's a little yucky going inside his mouth.
Oh,
but
no,
I
love it. I love it. I could live there.
Yeah, well, the sounds that came out of it just were amazing.
Oh, amazing.
So I've had a lot of fun playing around with musicians. Like, I did a poetic portrait, I guess you would say, of Jerry Mulligan. That's not in the book. But of taking Jerry Mulligan down to my basement when I was a child and playing the player piano with him in my basement. And I read it at a gig one night, and somebody said, "Oh, was that a friend of yours?" And I said, "No, that was Jerry Mulligan." And she said, "Oh, is he about your age?" And I said, "No." No, I think he died like when I was a child, but... It's wonderful to get to just play around with,
time.
You're
playing around with time, mm-hmm. Really, yeah. Which is timeless.
Well, and in a lot of ways, Rhea, I'm doing that all the time. I'm doing that in my art because I'm playing around with depth in my art.
Yeah.
Always. Since I started.
With depth and space.
Right.
And time and now and then and memory and dreams and... Mm-hmm. You're so layered in your poetry. It's what makes it so juicy. You know, you really tap my right brain when you offer so much right brain.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's glorious.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Language is very fun for me to play around with because you can shape it any which way.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that. I experiment, and I'm pretty drastic in how I experiment. But then at some point when I know what I want to say, then I'm determined. Then I'm so focused on getting exactly the right language. And my right language is not too typical, I don't think.
Not at
the way,
all.
The way I say things just in general, just walking around, isn't very typical. Yeah.
Uh-huh. In terms of your creative process of writing, now you've got a poem in there that I am going to ask you to read that is The Magic of Seeing. That's creative process in terms of art. But I'm curious about your creative process in terms of writing, whether how much you work on it, whether it comes in pieces. I mean, again, there's another incredible poem. Well, I don't want to jump around too much. Let me ask you about that first. Woo!
Yeah. Oh, my process in terms of writing
is
usually I go into it from a very spontaneous place of writing. And I think my short-term memory is a lot stronger than my long-term memory. I have to work a lot harder at that long-term memory. Mm-hmm. So when I write from... what happened today or what's foremost in my mind.
Sure.
And it comes out not as a diary entry, but bits and pieces, sort of like a stew.
Collage.
And,
collage. Yeah,
yeah,
very collage.
And then I begin, then I usually set that draft, I would call it, aside and try not to look at it for a long time, a month maybe, 6 months sometimes. Uh-huh. And then when I come back to it, it's foreign and it's also... sometimes fabulous. Sometimes it's junk, but a lot of times it's got these fabulous nuggets in there that I don't know where they came from. It's like I wrote it in a dream, but then again, I spend a lot of my life feeling like I'm in a dream, kind of, and in that sort of surreal, almost very lucky, very interesting place. And but that's a whole nother story. But
all is my own dream, you know.
Yeah.
All is my own dream.
Yeah, and it is.
And it is.
And it is.
Yeah.
You know,
we're making this up as we go.
So
it's a movie.
And I get to revise it all the time, that dream.
Sure.
And especially with language, especially with poetry, where I couldn't revise with art nearly as much. You know, it wasn't a painting.
Yeah.
I couldn't
paint
over it. I could cut it apart, and I did plenty of that. But.
Right. So talking about cutting it apart, I got a little gesture from Sean that looked like a break. We're going to have to take up a little quickie now. Thanks.
Okay.
Hi, we're back on Living Juicy, and of course we're talking with poet and artist Lauren Camp, who's another regular on KSFR on this station. On Sunday now, your show is at 5 on Sunday?
5 to 6.
5 to 6, yeah, I heard it last night. I just tuned in the middle of it, and it's like, oh yeah, there's Lauren.
It's so wonderful to get to do that. It's
fun.
Such a wide spectrum of music, and it's just, it's a blast, and it opens up my mind further and further, having to find music and ways to put it together. And that, too, is just like collage for me.
Yeah.
That's everything.
So we're talking about the creative process before the break. And Lauren has written a poem describing the art, creating a work of art. It's called The Magic of Seeing. I wonder if you could kind of lead us into that, Lauren.
Well, it's the first poem in the book.
Ah.
And
in the new book.
In the brand new book.
Brand new book that's coming out.
I can't wait to hold it. The book is called This Business of Wisdom, and there's a title poem of that same title later in the book.
We're going to want to hear that too, of course.
But this is how it starts, The Magic of Seeing. Notice the yellowing tape and the graphite hatches scattered across the paper, a dark diagram of saved details. Notice the pattern scored into each layer, then stripped and curved away. The long arc of sunlit days gilded into squares. Toss your small goodbyes into the sanded plains and the grid, slumped into a vague halo of wax. Notice the spaces for your worries. Notice the buoyant red and its authority over the canvas, the way it seems to be igniting. Notice lines that have collapsed, the ripped and wrung out corners, and the ruthless ones, each a departure from perfect balance. Notice the sweat, the swagger of trees, the shadow, and the scale. You stand in a pinhole, surfacing again in a haze of light, a paradox of vision. This is the view from the constructed earth, the sea, the future. You are folded into the shape and stretch. Your sure eye will see the ghosts, the yeasty texture of deliberation caked on and scraped off. Concentrate on the bruises, the pauses, and the breaks, each quarrel of pigment, the devotion to luck and the points of harmony, the drips, the gin, the risk, and negative space. Enjoy the language of the hand and the small stroke of reason. A shy ripple haunts the tall gray letters. Notice the horse's hooves, the fruit bowl, the spattered bloom of bravery, the virtue of the varnish. Listen to the slashes, the fire. Notice the dots and those repeating orange cars. And when your hands ask, love the hands that built this, that tilted back the paint into blades and eyes. Notice the white, the thunderous white, brooding with invisible butterflies in the center of the picture.
So you combine the senses. This is sight and sound. And probably smell is in there. Maybe I missed it, but boy.
I don't know. Smell's one that I don't go into quite as deeply.
The yeasty texture
caked
of deliberation. Mm-hmm. Ooh, yeasty.
This was a joy to write because I got to pull from poets, from artists I love and put their art into poetry
mm-hmm.
and the process and...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was just absolutely a joy.
Jackson Pollock was in there.
Mm-hmm. Andy Warhol
Andy
was
Warhol,
in there.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Many, many people.
Oh, wow. Rauschenberg had to be
Rauschenberg is always in there
always
for me.
Always in there, yeah.
Romare
yeah.
Bearden's always in there for me. Jacob Lawrence, yeah. There are a lot of favorites.
So the Holocaust series, you also did a Holocaust series several years ago. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I actually did that before the jazz series.
Jazz.
And then they both sort of blended, because as I told you about the Billie Holiday portrait, that came into dealing with lynching. And so the Jewish Holocaust and the lynching sort of blurred mm-hmm. into the background of that portrait. And the Holocaust series started from a book called Stones from the River by Ursula Hage that just... knocked me out. I grew up going to synagogue, and I grew up with the Holocaust being taught every year all the time, and I had gotten to the point where I couldn't take it in anymore. until that book. That book gave me the opposite, the other side, a new perspective.
Mm-hmm. Tell us the name of the book again.
Stones from the River by mm-hmm. Ursula Hage.
Mm-hmm.
Only book I've ever read of hers. And I was just so taken with that. And I guess I never really thought about it before, Rhea, but I guess I'm always looking for that other perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always looking to get away from mine because
mm-hmm.
mine seems boring.
Mm-hmm.
I know it
mm-hmm.
already.
Mm-hmm.
So I might as well go somewhere else and look through your eyes and look through
mm-hmm.
the eyes of other people.
Mm, how freeing.
Yeah.
It's so freeing because when you...
It is.
The whole idea of dropping your own opinion about something or take on something is hugely freeing. And then you get a whole nother airy approach. I mean, it gives you more air. It gives
yes.
you more buoyancy.
Yes. And it gives you more... It makes you more humble, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
as soon as you start looking through someone else's eyes...
Then you know that you don't know.
Yeah, you don't know.
Yeah. Wow.
And I'm happy about that when I don't know.
The first poem I think I read of yours was A Precise Small Thing. And if you'd like to give us a little background about that, but I'm not even sure you need to. It's up to you.
Actually, I'll read it and then maybe
Good.
I will.
Better, yeah.
A Precise Small Thing. I didn't know I would run out of time to memorize your voice. After 3 days trying, I just now remember the name of a trombonist I heard 3 years ago, and you have been missing 3,322 days. Dad laughed when I asked for the recording of you saying no one is home right now, with your wine-sopped, grass-pure voice. I can't remember it at all, that voice. Not the strange, wide way you had of stretching W's, or the laugh that started from a precise small thing and rolled on and on, expanding into time we didn't realize was ending. Or the way you called to us, your voice becoming a near shriek in the almost dark, our names as large as puppets expected to move back into that box of home again. Or how you said, Dad, just that one word. How you cried at the supper table some nights, your voice turning into salt and red breath. How you moaned gently. How your voice in my hands expired into something I could no longer hear. Something smaller than atoms.
That poem, just when I read it, but especially when I hear it, makes the hair stand up on my back and my arms. It's so really visceral. It's such a visceral memory. And you know, I just shared that I spent 5 days with 20 remarkable women in something called Cultivating Women's Leadership. And really, I think one of the things that came out of it for me is how much we know in our heads and how little we know to express from our hearts in terms of feeling.
Yes.
And you do that in your poetry. You're all heart in there and soul and feeling. And that's why it's so extraordinary to hear you read these poems. Tell us about that one now, if you would.
I will. I was thinking about it on the way over here, actually. My mother died 11 and a half years ago of lung cancer. She was 59. And as much as I understood how important my mother was to me when she was alive, I understood it more, and I missed her so much. The grieving was so intense for so long after she died. And I didn't expect it. It sort of came out of nowhere and just knocked me out. And in all those 11 and a half years, I don't think I go a day without thinking about her. And it's gotten less painful. It's gotten easier. And now my poems about her are sometimes more lighter. They're more humorous. Like, I bring her in everywhere I can. I bring her in the same way I bring jazz musicians in. It's like, oh, my mom is here for a day, and I'll put her in this poem. Or, and so a lot of the book is actually a good chunk of the book is actually about grieving, but not in a heavy sort of depressed way.
Mm-hmm.
I was never depressed about that. I was always, it felt good to grieve. It feels good to grieve for someone who's so important. And my mother was far from perfect, but she was, someone described her at her at the funeral as elegant. And I'd never thought of my mother that way. I mean, she was a mother. She was my mother. Who thinks of their mother as elegant? But in looking back and trying to hold on to everything I can about her, I realized she was pretty elegant in this world.
Oh, thank you for that. That's such a gift. I loved In the Locker Room, too. Mm-hmm. You sent me that. And that, of course, all of these are in the book, Lauren's new first book, which is coming out next week. I am so excited to get it. And it's called Wisdom. Wisdom.
This Business of Wisdom.
The Business of Wisdom. I love the name.
So my poems are pretty brutally honest. And here's one, In the Locker Room. At the gym, watching bodies come and go. Through locker vents, I spy on pliant skin the palpable thickness of another woman whose parts sway and balance on each other in a garbled indentation of fat. She lifts up her generous underwear, covers the soft, wide hairs at her center, her humble exertions, the bulky waves of in-out breaths. She reaches along the total volume of herself to tie her shoes. That is the body I once had, ledges instead of curves. Years ago, I obliged perfection, flattened my folds and flaps. Early morning weigh-ins, an apple for lunch, a temper tantrum of starving cells. In weeks, my body reconfigured. I spent a decade grasping the empty space. What I realize is how I hold myself now, the geography of this whispering, slender structure, the commands and distillations of bones that contain my life. But I admire the other body, the mortal aspect, how her inside is glued right there to the outside for everyone to notice.
Brilliant poem. One of the things I realized in these 5 days that was pointed out was that loving our bodies is
critical.
It's a radical act. It's mm-hmm. a revolutionary mm-hmm. act. Yeah. And it's urgent in whatever shape and size.
And it's hard to stay away from those messages
right.
that come from us everywhere else. And
but I can't imagine you with any other body than the one you've got, which is phenomenally
It fits me pretty
trim.
Well.
Yeah, it fits you damn well. Right.
Thank you.
This Business of Wisdom. You also teach. You work. We've only got about a minute and a half. You work in children's hospitals, public housing. What's your connection to that, to teaching?
My art makes it into those places. I teach literacy and remedial English. I tutor individually, one-on-one. My goal is to empower people. That's just in whatever. I teach creative writing classes. Little bits of everything collaged together.
You empower people with your poetry, I'm sure with your art. I haven't seen a lot of it, but what I've seen is pretty wild and wonderful. What's living juicy for you, Lauren?
Listening to other people through their eyes, loving people, and letting things be, letting things come to me, mm-hmm. and letting it be okay to express them.
Ooh, that's juicy. That's very juicy. Lauren, it has been a great delight for me to sit here and talk with you.
Thank
We've
you.
Never
it
done
went
this
by
before.
In a half a second. It was so quick.
I know. It was wonderful. Listen up next week. We're going to have another poet. Nathan Brown will be on. I'm in love with poets and poetry. Thanks so much, Lauren, for being on the show.
You bet. Thanks for asking me.
Yeah, thanks. And folks, send in your envelopes with money if you want to keep stations programs like this and Lauren's alive on KSFR. Send in your envelopes when asked. We need your help. We need your support. Listen up next week. We'll have somebody almost equally juicy. Good night.
Out of the tree of life, I just picked me a plum.